නමෝ තස් භගවතෝ අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස් භගවතෝ අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස් භගවතෝ අරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස දීගා ජාගරටෝ රත්ති දීගං සන්තස්ස යෝජනං දීගෝ බලානං සංසාරෝ සද්ධම්මං අවිජානතං. This is Dhammapada, verse number 60. No problem, this is verse number 60. Of a Dhammapada. What is the meaning? Long is the night to the sleepless. Long is the lead to the weary. Long is worldly existence to fools who know not the sublime truth. So in this verse, Dhammapada number 60, the Buddha says, long is the worldly existence in samsara, rounds of birth and death. For one who has fools, they have to go very long, round and round again in samsara, have to suffer for a long time. So, in the Buddha's teaching, when we talk about fools, who are the fools? The Buddha told us not to be fool, don't be bala, don't be a fool. Because our foolishness is a very serious cause of suffering, can cause a great suffering. A lot of other causes of suffering arise because of foolishness. So what is this foolishness? What is the factor involved? That is the main topic that today ourselves suggested to talk about this topic, moha. Delusion. In the Buddha's teaching, this delusion is a big problem for us. Because of delusion, we cannot act wisely. We end up as a fool and we do foolish things and we cause a lot of suffering to ourselves because of this moha. So today, let's try to understand what is this moha, delusion. I think the best translation I prefer is delusion. So, moha, delusion. Okay, can you see? Okay, you all can see delusion from the slide, moha. So, the moha, the opposite of moha is actually amoha, non-delusion, which actually is equivalent for panya, wisdom. Okay? So, now let's try to see how, in this case, moha, moho, is just linguistic things. It refers the same thing. So, let's see how, in the Pali, what we say about this moha. Usually, in the Buddha's teaching, we always study any elements, dhamma, from the point of these fourfold systems, characteristic, functions, manifestation, proximate cause, lakkhana, rasa, pachupatthana, padatthana, characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. So, let's see, characteristic for delusion. The Pali says, chittasa anda bhava lakkhano. It is a blindness of the mind. The mind that's blind, that doesn't see. Anyana lakkhano wa. Lakkhano is characteristic. Anyana, unknowing. So the characteristic of delusion is unknowing, is the blindness of the mind. Then the function. asampativeda raso. The function, huh? It has a function. The function is non-penetration, or we can say prevent penetration. The mind that prevent the mind from penetrating that certain realities. Aramana sabhava chadana rasova, or to conceal the individual essence of an object. You see the delusion, it has a function to not to penetrate and also to prevent our mind from penetrating to seeing the essence of an object. Okay, so function, remember. Then the manifestation, how it manifests? Asamma patipati pachupatthano. Pachupatthana, the manifestation. Asamma patipati. In this case, pati, it refers, patigam, patipati got many meanings. In this case, it refers to the right knowledge. But the asamma patipati, the not absence of right knowledge, or not the right knowledge, or andakara pachupatthanova. Andakara, as darkness. It manifests as darkness. The mind which is not bright, which is dark. So the deluded, the mind which has delusion, it is actually, it's not bright, it is dark. For those who practice cittanupassana, you will be able to see this very clearly. When a delusion appears in the mind is not bright. It's dark. So, then now there's a proximate cause. Ayoniso manasikara padatthano. Unwise attention. Ayoniso manasikara. Unwise attention. Or sometimes they will translate it as unskillful attention. Ayoniso, unwise attention, I think is a good translation. This is a proximate cause. A close reason. There are many reasons for delusion, but this is a close reason. More direct reason, we say proximate cause. Delusion is not caused by one thing, it's caused by many, many things. Later we will study. But this is an unwise attention. It's a proximate cause. Directly produce this delusion. Okay, now this is a general explanation. Sabba kusalang mulanti dadabo. It should be regarded, delusion should be regarded as the root of all that is unprofitable. The root of all that is unwholesome, unprofitable. Or akusala. Sabba akusala. So all the unwholesome one, delusion is the root. Because of delusion, everything, all the causes of suffering, all the unwholesome things arise. Okay? So, now, let's look at the opposite, which is actually amoha, or we say panya. When we study this, we need to study the opposite. Then it helps us to understand moha more. When you look at the panya. The characteristic of panya is, what is the characteristic of panya? Dhamma sabhava pativeda lakana. Dhamma sabhava pativeda. Penetrating the individual essence of states. Anything. Any state. The wisdom has the ability to penetrate, to see deeper into situation, into anything that we pay our attention to. We penetrate the individual essence of states. This is the characteristic of wisdom. Then the function. Dhammanang sabbhava paticchadaka mohandakara vidinsangasana rasa. To abolish the darkness of delusion which conceals. Now, wisdom has the function to abolish the darkness of delusion. Darkness of delusion. Mohandakara. Darkness of delusion. Which conceals the individual essence of states. Dhamma sabhava paticchadaka. Conceals. To abolish it. We have to vidangsana rasa. It has a function to abolish the darkness of delusion which conceals the individual essence of states. This is the function. See, this is the opposite. Wisdom is to throw away the delusion. throw away darkness. It's just like a light. That's why we always describe wisdom as a light. So the light which dispel darkness. So whenever the wisdom arises, darkness disappear. Okay? So that is why there is a wisdom. So like just like light and darkness, this is opposite. So wisdom and delusion is just opposite to each other. Okay? What about the manifestation of wisdom? Asammoha pachupatthana. Asammoha. As clarity of perspective. Actually, asammoha. It comes from the word moha, the root word. Asammoha, non-delusion. Non-delusion. But sometimes people like to translate, put in a more positive expression. Actually, it's non-delusion. Non-bewilderment. So they like to use a positive translation, a clarity of perspective, lucid discernment. Okay, that's also the right way. It's okay, understood. Then the proximate cause for wisdom. Samahito yatha bhutang janati passati ti. Vachanato pana samaditasa padatthanang. The proximate cause is actually concentration. Samahita. Because the Buddha says, one who has enough concentration knows and sees the Dhammas as they really are. Yatha bhutang. As they really are. Janati passati. Knows and see. Samahito. One who has concentration can know and see things as they really are. So this is a wisdom. So this proximate cause is especially the cause of insight, especially the vipassana insight. Okay. So, okay, let's look at the expression generally. Panya is wisdom, understanding or knowing the Dhammas or ultimate realities as they really are. It is here called a faculty because it exercises predominance in comprehending the Dhammas as they really are. In the Abhidhamma, the three terms, wisdom, panya, knowledge, jnana, and non-delusion, amoha, are used synonymously. Insight or insight knowledge is also this mental factor, wisdom faculty. Okay, amoha, cetasika, amoha, non-delusion, mental factor, or we say the wisdom mental factor. It refers to the same thing. So now, when we use the word moha or amoha, delusion or non-delusion or wisdom, usually this wisdom or delusion it means you are not knowing the truth. Wisdom means you know the truth. Usually we always refer to two aspects. Of course, in the Dhamma, the important aspect is the ultimate truth, paramattha satya aspect. Or and then the other one is conventional truth. Conventional truth is the conventional aspect. So these two aspects is the way the wisdom can function. And if you know these two, then the delusion is dispelled. Okay. So, now, so when we talk about conventional aspect, usually we can see delusion in a lot of common experiences. In conventional aspect, delusion affects us in what ways? Usually people call, oh, this person has a distorted perception. Usually when a person has distorted perception, delusion is there. Delusion affects the person, has distorted perception, and then the wisdom cannot arise. Or false judgment. Because of delusion, we can make wrong judgment, false judgment, make wrong decision. A deceiving logic. Sometimes people seem to reason. They think it's very logical. But sometimes the logic is faulty. This also because of, also very much influenced and caused by delusion. And wrong direction. Seeing the wrong direction. You want to save yourself this way, but you run another way. Because of delusion. Not being able to see where you can actually save yourself. And sometimes people have good intention. I want to do something good. But it produces a harmful result. This is also another workings of delusion. And then unnecessary suffering. Sometimes people suffer unnecessarily. Is there such thing as necessary suffering? Yes. If the karma definitely want to ripen and has caused harm to us, maybe disaster, natural disaster, or accident, this is, you may call it necessary. Or maybe you don't want to use the word necessary, but it is something which you cannot avoid, unavoidable suffering. When we say unnecessary suffering means, actually it is avoidable. But because of our delusion, we run into avoidable suffering. This, I would call it unnecessary suffering. So there's a lot of things, it happens in our life, which we can call, we can see how delusion works. So it is good? It is not good. These are the things that because by dispelling delusion, we can avoid 1 to 6 and many others. And we can make a big change in our life if we can dispel delusion. So this is a delusion in common practice, experiences. Okay? So why with fundamental delusion? What are the fundamental delusion which actually the Buddha emphasized so much? Because of fundamental delusion, then other delusion in common practice. But most people don't see this fundamental delusion. Most people, it's easier to see this in common experiences. It's easier to see the harm of this delusion. But it's not easy to see this, the harm of this delusion for ordinary people. They don't see. But let's see what the Buddha says about it. Delusion is the things which obstruct, we obstruct our penetration of Four Noble Truths. Delusion make us unable to see the noble truth of suffering, to see the noble truth of the causes of suffering, to see the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, to see the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. As I put in brief, it means cessation of suffering to be complete. To lead to this cessation of suffering. So, is it important? Yes. Without penetrating Four Noble Truths, it is not possible to attain liberation from the realms of birth and death, samsara. This is an important delusion, fundamental delusion, which we have to really tackle. Okay? Now, what are the things we briefly see? What is this, briefly go through, what is this noble truth of suffering? In the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, in the first sutta, the discourse about the turning of the Dhamma wheel, the Buddha said, this is a birth is suffering, old age is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering. The separation from what we love is suffering, association with what we don't like, that is suffering. Then not getting what we want is suffering. This is dukkha-dukkha, obvious suffering, which we can easily see. But more important suffering is the real, universal, and embedded suffering in our nature of our life. Sankitena panchupadana khanda dukkha, the Buddha says. In brief, all 5 aggregates of attachment, of clinging, 5 aggregates of clinging, our rupa, our materiality, vedana, our feeling, sanya, our perception, sankhara, our mental formations, and vijnana, our consciousness. These are the suffering. So when we talk about noble truth of suffering, if we want to penetrate the deeply, ultimately, it actually goes to this. Okay, let's see. What is this? Usually in the Abhidhamma, we use yes, consciousness. It comes first with consciousness. But for our purpose, I would first go to the mental states before I go to the consciousness. We have consciousness. We have 52 mental factors. Okay, let's see this. For our purpose, it's easier. 52 mental factors at a glance. We have these. You may not be able to see, so we split into a smaller one. It's okay. We have the basic. We have the ethical variables. Maybe it can associate with the wholesome mind, and it can associate with the unwholesome mind. Seven universals. We have contact, feeling, perception, volition, one-pointedness, life faculty, attention. We have these seven types of universal. That means in all kind of consciousness, you sure to have these seven. Okay. Then you have six occasional, pakinaka. So we have a initial application, sustained application, decision, energy, zest, or sometimes translated as a rapture or joy, desire. That means sometimes it occur to some consciousness, sometimes it doesn't occur. So this is the sixth one. So these six plus the seven, we have 13. Okay, 7 plus 6, we have 13. This is the ethical variables. It can associate with wholesome one and unwholesome. Okay, then we have unwholesome factors. We have 14 type of unwholesome mental factors. We have 4 universals. Okay, that means all unwholesome minds should have these 4. Okay, all unwholesome minds, you should have these 4. Delusion, shamelessness, fearlessness of wrong, and restlessness. Okay. Then you have this occasional. Sometimes it occurs, sometimes it doesn't occur to the unwholesome mind. You have greed, you have wrong view, conceit, hatred, envy, avarice, wrong, worry, sloth, torpor, and doubt. Okay. These are the mental states. Then you have beautiful factors. You have 25 kind of good quality for the mind, for the wholesome consciousness. You have these kind of mental states. 25 beautiful one. 19 universal. That means all wholesome minds should have these 19 qualities. Okay. Faith, mindfulness, shame, fear of wrong, non-greed, non-hatred, neutrality of mind, then tranquility of mental body, tranquility of consciousness, lightness of mental body, lightness of consciousness, malleability of mental body, malleability of consciousness, wildiness of mental body, wildiness of consciousness, proficiency of mental body, proficiency of consciousness, rectitude of mental body, rectitude, uprightness of consciousness, rectitude of uprightness. So these 19 in all wholesome mind is sure to have in different degree, yes, but sure to occur. Okay. So when we have wholesome mind, we have a lot of good qualities. Then there's three abstinences, right speech, right action, right livelihood, when we abstain from the wrong things. Then two illimitables, compassion, appreciative joy. And then we have this non-delusion. This is a key. So non-delusion with wisdom faculty. Sometimes that means in wholesome mind, sometimes it occur, sometimes it doesn't occur. Okay? So today this is our key point. So these are the things that 52 mental factors. If you want to understand the noble truth of suffering, this is one of the subjects you have to penetrate. You have to see. If you don't see this, the 5 aggregates. This comes under when we have the feeling. Feeling, the second mental factor, feeling is actually the feeling aggregate. Then perception, sanya, is the perception aggregate. And then the rest 50 is actually sankara, sankara. The third, actually is the fourth aggregate. The first is rupa. Later we'll talk about the rupa. So these are the aggregates. And then plus the consciousness. So you have 4 aggregates here. So 3 mental factors. These 52 mental factors already cover 3 aggregates. feeling, perception, and mental formations. And then you have a consciousness. So, we have listen, activate. You need to see this ultimate reality in order to understand what is this noble truth of suffering. Then 89 or 1-to-1, this depends on classification. The 1-to-1, today we don't go into it, but mainly it's 89 kind of consciousness. Okay, let's look at various, this is a fifth aggregate, aggregate of consciousness. You have unwholesome consciousness. 8 belongs to the greed category, 2 belongs to the hatred category, 2 belongs to the purely delusion. Actually, the greed and hatred, you also have delusion there. But 2 is a purely delusion rooted. Citta is consciousness. Then the rootless one. 7, 8, and 9, and 3. Let's go through quickly. Then the beautiful one, 24, 888, wholesome, resultant, and functional. Functional refers to the Arahant mind. Then the five material. Of course, before a person come to Arahant, you may not be able to take. If you want to see, you can only see the first eight. You may not be able to see the last eight, the functional one. So, okay. Then the 15. Five material. That means the Jhana world, the Brahma world, Brahma consciousness, which a human can also have, if you cultivate especially the wholesome, not the resultant, the wholesome one. But unless you see the previous life consciousness. Okay, anyway, we put it simple. So, 5-5-5. This is the Abhidhamma classification. He divide the jhana. The 4 jhana, you can divide it into the 5 aspect. Then there are 12. The boundless space, boundless consciousness, nothingness, and neither perception nor non-perception. So these are the Arupa Brahma kind of consciousness. This is an immaterial sphere kind of consciousness. So when you attain up to this kind of jhana, let's say neither perception nor non-perception, you have the mind of the Arupa Brahma. So then the supramundane, actually there are 4, but because of the jhana level, it is possible to have 5 types, but everyone can only experience 1. Not 5. But can have 5 types, but 1 can only experience 1 type. So, because of that, we say 89 or 1-to-1, depends on 8 or 40, depends here. That's why the consciousness come under this. Okay? So, we have this consciousness. So this is the ultimate, ultimate reality that if you want to get to the noble truth of suffering. Then the 28 material phenomena. See, this is the first aggregates, the rupa, the first aggregates. Okay, there are 28 types of material, materiality. 28 types. Okay, let's break down and quickly glance through. 4 great essential, that means all materiality, the basic one, earth, water, fire, wind, or air. Then the produced matter, eye sensitivity, ear, nose, tongue, body sensitivity. Then this visible form, sound, and taste. And then, three, and then for tangibility, the three elements, earth, fire, and air, already included. So, this is, no need to repeat. Then the sexual phenomena, which decide femininity, man and woman, we have this materiality in us. Man, we have man one, and female, have the female one. Then you have the heart materiality. You have this. Then you have a life faculty, material, we have a life faculty, and you have a nutriment. These are the 18 basic ones. When we practice vipassana, these, you have to see up to this, 18, to break down. Then these are the non-concrete matter. Non-concrete matter is not the object, of Vipassana. They have a space element, bodily intimation, vocal intimation, but need to be able to understand, to see it also. Lightness, malleability, wilderness, and production, continuity, decay, impermanence. Okay, so briefly. So we have this. So this cover all the five aggregates, which is the noble truth of suffering. Okay. Then you have another. These are the object, this is sankhara, consciousness, mental states, and materiality. It comes under sankhara. It has a nature of a conditioned, and it has a nature of arising and passing away. And this unconditioned, asankata, unconditioned, and nibbana, is another ultimate, the fourth ultimate reality, which is, so for wisdom, these are the things. This is nibbana. This is the third noble truth, noble truth of cessation. So here, this is for delusion. You don't see the first noble truth. You don't see second noble truth, third noble truth, fourth noble truth. To break away this delusion, the fundamental delusion, you overcome the first, you see penetrate first noble truth by dispelling the delusion which obstruct us from seeing the first noble truth by practicing sila samadhipanya so that we can see this. Just now, the mental states, consciousness, materiality, or you put it in Abhidhamma way, rupa, and the consciousness, mental states, and materiality, and to see this thoroughly, it enables us to see the final one, the nibbana. Okay? Now we go back to this quickly. Okay. Okay. We go to the, you see, later we, to cultivate, to dispel the delusion. We need to dispel the delusion and to cultivate the wisdom to be able to see noble truth of suffering. After that, you can go to dependent origination to see the causes of suffering. Okay. Then, because of these two, we'll be able to experience and penetrate the noble truth of cessation of suffering. But the way is to practice the path leading to the cessation of suffering, noble eightfold path, which is actually sila samadhipanya, morality or virtues. Sila is sometimes we translate as virtues. And virtues, I think, is a better, more beautiful translation for the word sila. Then samadhi, concentration, and panya, wisdom. So because of the practice of the fourth noble truth enable us to penetrate this first noble truth and second noble truth thoroughly. And because of penetration of first noble truth and second noble truth thoroughly, we enable us to see the experience, the cessation of suffering, which is to realize nibbana. Of course, in details, we have first you have to overcome the cessation of defilements. Then see the cessation of five aggregates, then experience the asankata, nibbana. But we put aside these technicalities. In simple terms, means cessation of suffering, nibbana. Okay. So now, that's just a basic, very brief introduction. But for key, for common man, everyday, common man. This is a crucial question. How to avoid delusion in daily life? Two questions. One is to, and for practitioner, how to avoid delusion in our spiritual life? These are the two questions. So first, let's see again. Basically, when we talk about we want to overcome delusion in our daily life, we are talking about overcoming just now these things. Distorted perception, false judgment, deceiving logic, wrong direction, good intention, but you make harmful result. We should not avoid this. And you should avoid unnecessary suffering. These are the things that we have to do. Later we will talk more about this. Then the next question important is how to avoid delusion in meditation practice. Actually, if you know how to avoid delusion in meditation practice, you come back to this question, which is much easier. So, we will come back. So, let's look at this. Applying the principles. You see, the noble truth, for noble truth, we can apply this wisdom in different level. Of course, when the Buddha teach, four noble truth, it refers to the, when the Buddha taught this, it refers to the very high level. Noble truth, suffering, cause of suffering, cessation of suffering, path leading to cessation of suffering, just as that's what we went through. Very profound level to the ultimate level. But actually this formula is also very useful in our lower level, common level, day-to-day dealing. Okay, how? Look at this. Actually, in this Four Noble Truths, you see these two sets of cause and effect. Suffering is actually the effect. Cause of suffering is actually, it refers to cause. So cause of C and E, cause and effect of problem. Then cessation of suffering and the ways to cessation, to cease suffering. Now this is to make it very simple. Effect and cause. Cause and effect of our goal. This is the Buddha in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta mentions many times. The Tathagata, the Buddha, only teach one thing. Suffering and cessation of suffering. The Buddha said one thing. Suffering and cessation of suffering. So this covers suffering and cessation of suffering. But in order to deal with suffering and cessation of suffering, we need to deal with their cause. If you don't see the cause, you don't see suffering, you don't see the ways lead to the cessation of suffering, you will not come to cessation of suffering. So these two sets of cause and effect, it helps us to deal with everything in our life. You know? Everything. If we approach by this way, it helps us a lot to overcome our delusion in our daily life, in our practice as well. When we practice, we want to practice, let's say, we practice samatha and vipassana. Okay? When you practice samatha, what is your aim? You want to get samadhi. Jhana, upachara, samadhi, jhana, appana, samadhi. You want to get absorption, jhana. So you need to know what you want to overcome is nivarana, the five hindrances. Okay, you need to know. And how to deal with it, how to reach it. Okay. So you need to know. This is the problem. This is my problem, my physical problem, my problem. So what is the cause of this problem? And you try to deal with the cause of it and you overcome it. Yeah. You know your aim is very clear. I want to cease this problem. Then I want to ask myself how to do it, how to cultivate it. So actually, when you go down to the Buddha's teaching, Sila, Samadhi, Panya, Seven Purification, all these things, actually it boils down to methodology, the method to enable us to overcome our problem by dealing with the causes. So remember these two sets of cause and effect. Of course, when we talk about, if we talk about Nibbana, Asankata Nibbana, it is unconditioned. You cannot say Nibbana has a cause. But from the point of I doing it correctly and I achieve it, it is like a result. Like that. So this is a bit technical. Just for those who have a query in their mind. We mentioned this. But it doesn't matter. You can just put it aside for the time being. Okay. Now, in the Buddha's teaching, this, if you apply this methodology, you will find it is very helpful. And you find it in your daily life, you apply this, you find that it helps us to overcome the delusion. Sometimes because our mind is too cloudy, cannot see things clearly. Sometimes people have a problem-minded and not the solution-minded. Just dwell on the problem again and again, they forget. They actually want solution. So because of this, applying wrong methods to deal with our problem, we get very deluded. But if we remember our methodology, this methodology guide us, make us be able to see our problem clearer and get a way out faster. So this methodology is very useful in helping us to overcome our delusion. Then another thing, these four clear comprehension, in the commentary of Mahasatipatthana Sutta. Everyone knows, huh? In the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, we have a section dealing with Sampajanya. So, in the Kayanupassana Satipatthana, you have this Sampajanya practice. In which the Buddha says, when you stretch your hand, pull back your bend your hand, all activities quiet, keep quiet and speaking or whatever, you be mindful. You have clear comprehension. This is cultivating this. But in the commentary, it goes further. Explain how to apply this four clear comprehension. Sataka Sampajanya. Purpose. When a person has a clear comprehension, this is actually the Chetasika, the mental factor for Sampajanya is actually Panya, it's wisdom. So if you apply this, which means if you apply this in life, you're applying wisdom in life. And then actually it's overcome a lot of delusion. Sataka Sampajanya, clearly remembering the purpose. You see, when people are very aware and when the mind is very wise, whatever your action, you are fully aware. You are very aware of the purpose. Sapaya, suitability or helpful condition, sometimes supporting condition. Sapaya, supporting condition, which is suitable, helpful for the purpose, supporting it. Suitable, such it translated as suitable. Actually, sapaya is supporting helpful conditions, which is helpful for the to achieve the purpose. Okay, so clearly comprehending, and for meditators, this is very important. And domain, this is not forgetting, clearly aware, clearly comprehending that what you're doing. For meditators, this is like when you practice anapanasati, when your whatever actions, you are fully aware of this. When you practice metta, in all your activities, action, you are fully aware of this. Not only aware, it's further, you are clearly not getting it. So like this, gochara sampajanya. Then non-delusion. Not fall into this is nicca, this is a permanence, not fall into this is sukha, this is happy, this is actually seeing the nature is unsatisfactory. And then not fall into atta, not fall into I, sense of I, then actually fully comprehend the anatta. Okay. Of course, this is for advanced practitioners. You have to reach up to asamoha. Strictly speaking, you have to see ultimate reality, at least up to when you come to Nama Rupa Pariccheda Jnana, then at least at this time, by this Asamoha, you are able to see what are the, just now we say the Rupa, 28 material reality, the Citta, or the consciousness, and the Cetasika. But mainly the day-to-day, daily, ordinary people, it is easier to practice the first and second. Okay? First and second. Okay? So, these are the especially, if you just practice this first and second, whatever you do, you know your purpose, you're suitable, speaking also, just look at the meeting. It will be very efficient. Our life will be very efficient. You see, when sometimes in the meeting, especially in Tusita, Dharma Earth, we always emphasize that when we have our meeting, make sure everyone speak without forgetting this four clear comprehension. Then the meeting become very efficient. You don't get so deluded and talk about the irrelevant things. You focus on the relevant and helpful for your purpose. So we allow our companion to question us. What is the purpose of saying this? What is the purpose? Is this suitable? What is the purpose of doing this? If you cannot tell, then you better don't speak. If you speak, only when you can speak clearly. So in this way, we are encouraging by questioning, at the beginning, by training, by raising the question, what is my purpose? Is it suitable? This helps us to cultivate the clear comprehension. Then up to a point, it becomes automatic. You don't think much about it, but the clear comprehension comes with you without much thinking. Just like a person, when you learn driving, you learn the steering, They learn the signal, they learn the clutch, and how to the pedal on the accelerator. All these things, yeah? And the gears, everything. Yeah? But up to a point, when you drive, it becomes automatic like that, yeah? And you get used to it. Similarly, it seems difficult to apply for, but actually when you get used to it, yes, it comes. That wisdom, when you have that wisdom, you easily have these clear comprehensions appear in our mind. Okay, so when we practice this, actually this can be practiced in our daily life. And these two things, just these two things, there are so many things to do. When you say dispel delusion, these two things is so helpful. So helpful. Okay. So, besides that, we can talk about a few other things which will be helpful for us not to fall into the delusion and cultivate wisdom. Okay. Okay. Now, another aspect we need to know is, there is a state of mind when we are deluded, when delusion is there. There is a state of mind when you have wisdom, when the wisdom is there. But there is also a kind of experience which is lack of wisdom. It doesn't mean you are deluded, but you lack wisdom. This is a stage. For example, when people do dana, they don't apply much wisdom, they just do. Whether it's suitable or not suitable, useful or not useful, whether it has a cause and effect, people just do. Because other people tell you to do, you do. You don't care whether it's suitable and helpful, what is the purpose of doing it. No, just do. And at that time, this is good heart. But it's not wisdom. It's lack of wisdom. It's not at that time, wholesome mind doesn't come with delusion. Delusion only come with unwholesome mind. But this is lack of wisdom. We need to understand this. Okay, lack of wisdom is one thing. Delusion is one thing. Then, to cultivate the wise mind, wisdom, you really need to cultivate. Not having delusion is not enough. You need to cultivate wisdom. So this is one thing we need to know. And then to cultivate wisdom, to avoid delusion, you need to cultivate attitude for wisdom. Attitude not to be deluded. This attitude is very important. Attitude to be wise. Then the second thing, ability. You need to cultivate the ability to be wise. Without ability, even though you want to be wise, but you're not able to be wise. You want to see the ultimate reality. You want to penetrate things, but you're not able to. Yeah. So this ability, you need to have the tools. The tool is actually virtues and concentration, cultivation. And then the skillful practice of vipassana can help you to cultivate your wisdom. Of course, in a common aspect, if you want to have the day-to-day living attitude for wisdom, you need to be humble, not to be proud. Maybe I'm wrong. Can I be wrong? Be careful. Now, this kind of attitude, humility, is also helpful for wisdom. Because if the mind is too puffed up, too proud, then the mind already closed, stubborn. Not willing to listen to opposing ideas. Then wisdom cannot arise. Because you already blocked the domain of wisdom. Data. You block the facts and data. You don't want to listen to facts and data. This is a problem. Domain of wisdom. There's a lot of example to give. A lot of example, but because of time constraint, I will just leave it at this. Okay? So, ability to be wise, you need to cultivate. You see, to be wise, you have to penetrate four noble truths. The Buddha said, yata bhutang jnana dasanang. Seeing things as they really are with wisdom. But if you don't cultivate this ability, you cannot see. You don't have the attitude, also attitude cannot see. Then you have to apply. Even you have the ability, but you have to apply it to the domain of wisdom. So in this case, actually it's a, you need to see the first noble truth and second noble truth. You need to apply your mind to first noble truth, the materiality, the feeling, the perception, the mental formations, and the consciousness. So if you don't work on this domain of wisdom, how to see the wisdom? And in the conventional aspect, if you don't go to the facts and data, then it's very difficult to exercise wisdom, the right judgment, because you don't get the facts with you. So this is the things. So domain of wisdom means the facts and data. In the ultimate sense, it means the ultimate paramattha dhamma, ultimate realities. Okay? So these are the things. So it covers external, internal, external, and internal, external, both. To and fro. So we always start with that internal. You need to understand yourself first. Ultimate aspect, you need to see the ultimate reality of internal, the five entities. But if you say day-to-day living, day-to-day dealing, you need to know internal. You need to know yourself first. Are you ready to take up this challenge? Let's say you're a student, want to choose a career, or want to choose a subject, what you want to study in a university. You need to understand yourself, what you like. What is your ability? Are you able to do it? What is your potential? What is your inclination? Understand very well. And you need to understand the subject. So in this way, internal and external. And both internal and external. And then another thing is very helpful for wisdom to cultivate is you need to aspire for wisdom. Have the inclination towards wisdom. Because if you aspire for wisdom and incline towards wisdom, then you learn to appreciate wisdom. You are able to see where wisdom is applied in every aspect. You are able to see. If you don't have the inclination for it, then it's difficult to appreciate wisdom. So these are the few things which is very helpful for our cultivation of wisdom. Okay, now I want to show you all what we do in Dhamma Earth that it helps us on Tusita when recently we help ourselves to remind ourselves to reflect so that our mind incline to the right way. It helps us a lot to help us to dispel delusion in some ways. Okay, this is what we do. Look at the English. Now is the precious and opportune moment to practice Dhamma, cultivate the mind and causes for the transformation and upliftment of my life. This is the first reflection. We remind ourselves of the importance of now. Because now is the only chance to cultivate new cause. To change our life, this is the cause. We can only work on causes. When we want to say we want to change our life, we work on the causes. So this is the thing. Remind ourselves, causes can only be worked now only. Past cannot, future not yet come. Only now. So when we can always remember this, it helps us to not to work on the unnecessary thing. When we are deluded, we work on our mind dwell on the past and future in the wrong way. But if we apply wisdom, we learn from the past and we see our projection clearly, but eventually we work on the present moment. Okay? Then the second reflection we always do. Let me be aloof from the worries about past and future and be free from any obsession about people's right and wrong, good and evil. Because this assertion doesn't help. Let me begin each new day free of emotional drawbacks and inhibitions. Yes, it is exactly because of emotional drawbacks and inhibitions, our internal obstacles, which make us our mind deluded, wrongly directed, and make us not able to apply wisdom. So this reflection is actually to train our attitude. Train our attitude. Okay. Then the third one. I shall always remember the dangers in samsara, the faults of birth, old age, sickness, and death, and the transiency of life. I shall not cease to be heedful and diligent due to short-lived pleasant experiences till I attain the security of the other shore, Nibbana. This is to always bear in mind, remember, so that we don't get deluded by temporarily short-lived good experiences. Don't be deceived and keep us grounded. This will also help us to avoid delusion. I shall wholeheartedly cherish and utilize every present moment with loving kindness, compassion, mindfulness, and the four clear comprehension. Cherish. Cherish every present moment. And these are when we say loving kindness, compassion, mindfulness, and four clear comprehension. This is to reinforce, especially to make us emotionally healthy. When our emotional and is not healthy, we don't have love within us. Then usually wisdom also not easy to arise. Then Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha, Nisha, is the basis for the existence, rise and fall, and sustenance of all beings, events and phenomena in the universe. Dhamma has a vast meaning. Let me learn and deserve Dhamma with the most focused mind. We are inclined. We are aspiring for concentration. So that we can deserve the Dhamma, we can realize the Dhamma. So this, the mind inclined towards Dhamma, we have wisdom. May I have a gentle, attentive heart? May I be humble, respectful, and rightly absorb Dhamma guidance and teachings? May I be swift to flow along with what is true and good? This is to be humble. Have a gentle, attentive heart. The Buddha say, to be wise, you have to associate with the wise. But if we don't have a gentle, attentive heart, even when we associate with the wise, we may not be able to appreciate the wisdom, to get the wisdom. This is in the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, we will be like the ladder, the spoon that doesn't know the taste of the soup. But if we have this attentive heart, then when we associate with the wise, we will be like the tongue that knows the taste of the soup. Okay? And this attitude is very important. May I enhance wisdom and compassion when I encounter ups and downs, pleasant and unpleasant experiences. Many people reject, but they feel very dejected when they have unpleasant experiences. That actually when we dwell on that unpleasant experiences, our mind cannot make good use of that opportunity. Instead, if we have the right attention, wise attention, we tell ourselves, these unpleasant experiences is actually good for me to learn to cultivate a lot of wholesome dhammas. So this also can give us the wisdom. We apply. We want to make good use of every experiences. I shall not crave any resultant condition experiences of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Basically, all our experiences is just come from these six sense doors. Then if we don't crave, because you cannot crave, it's resultant. With detachment, I shall endure, embrace, and utilize all experiences for self-cultivation. I shall cultivate good causes through thought, speech, and action according to truth and conditions. This is to cultivate the attitude so that we make good use of every opportunity. This is to reinforce the previous reflection. Facing all life experiences, I shall reflect upon causes, effects, and conditionality. These cause and effect is so useful. This attitude. Look at everything happen to us. Look at cause and effects of it. Try to understand the cause and effects of them. Then we can cultivate a lot of wisdom from there. No matter the externalities, I will suffer more if I increase causes of suffering such as greed, anger, and delusion. Yes. Give no excuses for our causes of suffering. No excuses. When we give a lot of excuses to ourselves, we are deluded and wisdom cannot arise. Don't give excuses. I shall apply Dhamma for the purification of my own thought, speech, and action, and not for the measuring and judging of others. Yes, when people apply Dhamma to judge others, to blame others, then we are not cultivating wisdom already. This helps us a lot. We are not purifying ourselves. Giving up useless energy, draining, grumbling. This will delude the mind. Let all my action or inaction be pragmatic, improve situation, and at least not make them worse. This is very important attitude in our daily life. In any given situation, how can we make things better and not make them worse? Okay. I shall cherish and be grateful to all teachers, elders, heavenly guardians, earthly benefactors, spiritual companions, and all wholesome conditions. With courage and strength, I shall cherish and be grateful for even unavoidable difficult conditions that train and test me. Let all life encounters and experiences make me a better person and develop my insight. Okay, this one everyone can understand. Overcoming guilt, remorse, and anger, I shall forgive and empathize with the faults of myself and all beings caused by ignorance and other defilements. This is also to free us, free our present moment from this unwholesome state, so that we can apply, can cultivate good causes at the present moment. Guarding against jealousy, I rejoice in all the kindness, victories, and achievements of all beings. Let my mind synchronize with all wholesome Dhamma. Okay. This is clear. May all beings who see, hear, and contact and think of me grow in faith towards Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. May they embark upon the great journey of liberation from sufferings and realization of true happiness, being inspired by my Dhamma cultivation, loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, equanimity, virtue, concentration, wisdom, sincerity, and devotion towards Dhamma, and my change, progress, and transformation. Okay. Then may all wholesome wishes of all beings be fulfilled. Because of time constraint, I want to keep time for your questions, so I will not be able to explain each and every reflection. But it has a lot to do with our dispelling, our delusion, and cultivate the right attitude for the wisdom and Dhamma application, and then for our Dhamma practice. So, okay, now time is very limited. So I open let you open for questions. What is that? We have two questions. We have a questions here. Question from Brother Ko Wei Ken. One of the manifestations of moha is deceiving logic, flawed logic. How can the development of panya overcome the flaws in our logical reasoning? Flaws in our logical reasoning. Okay. You see, for example, one common flaw in the Buddha's, in the Dhamma world, is people say, if there is no self, who is being reborn? Who is being reborn? If you say someone is being reborn, there must be a self, a permanent self. There must be a soul. So then you have these scholars who argue again all this kind of just reasoning. Because they don't understand that there is aspect of truth which can only be known by direct penetration. So, even though they may seem very logical, there must be a self. If there's no self, how to be? Who is being reborn? But wisdom allows us to know which aspect of truth is for reasoning, which aspect of truth is for direct experience. For example, people try to use reasoning to reason, oh, heaven. If everyone go to heaven, heaven will fall down, too heavy. This also, we go by this. But if we understand and see dependent origination and rebirth and the round of birth and death, then you know clearly this kind of argument is not necessary. It's faulty. Because this is an aspect which is not for the reasoning. This is not for this simple reasoning. So you know where to stop. This is one example. This is one example which I can think of. Okay. And sometimes in the conventional aspect, for example, people see under the table there's something long or dark. People think that's a snake. If you say there may not be a snake, you cannot know because you don't have the wisdom. Wisdom is like light. It shine and you see. Ah, okay, yes. That's not a snake. That's just a rope. Or maybe there's a real snake and you see it as a rope. Then because of the light, you see and you can see clearly. So for example, sometimes the faulty logic, one reason make us having a faulty logic is the, for example, the moha caused by maybe pride. The pride make the mind not willing to listen. Okay, this is, you tell me a lot of data. No, I don't need to know. I already know. So because of this attitude, the mind is covered. Right? You don't have, not open to data, the facts and data. So because of that, you do all the reasoning with limited data, limited information. You're not able to see. But with the wisdom, you tell yourself, oh, I need to collect my data first. I need to have enough data before I try to understand this, where am I in the situation. So this is also another thing that because of wisdom, you can overcome the flaws of logic and reasoning. You know where, sometimes you know, is this something for logic and reasoning? This is not for logic and reasoning. And sometimes you know, for the logic and reasoning to work well, you need to have enough data. You know, if your data is not enough, then your logic, your reasoning may not be complete. This is also another thing. And sometimes, because of, you think, oh, my mind is very logical. But sometimes, because of a limited, our mind is very limited dimensions. So if we have a wisdom, you say, oh, if I am so wise, I must be the Buddha or Arahant. So if I am not Arahant, I am not the Buddha, Pachika Buddha, not Arahant, I must have some ignorance. I must have delusion. And what the Buddha says in the Dhammapada? Let's look at what the Buddha says in the Dhammapada. The Buddha said, a fool who knows his foolishness is wise at least to that extent. But a fool who thinks himself wise is a fool indeed. So if we know we don't have complete wisdom. So this itself is a wisdom. So, for example, so sometimes you think, oh, it's very logical. My mind is very logical. I must be right. But if you ask yourself, am I Arahant? No. If I'm not Arahant, I have delusion. Delusion is not uprooted from me. So I must be careful with my logical thinking. So let me listen to the wise and listen to other people and see what other people have to say. So this is an application of wisdom. Then we can prevent our logic, the logical thinking, which may be very limited, maybe imperfect. We can avoid that. So wisdom helps a lot. There are a lot of examples. Because of time constraint, what is the next question? Another, Jiu Hao Ting. Dear Venerable, may I know how to take Moha as our Vipassana meditation object during practice? Moha as it is object, as is object, it has ceased. Because cannot have two citta arise together. Yes, but the mind can see the mind, not the seeing mind doesn't see itself. Actually, when we practice Vipassana, for example, when you say, when you know you're angry, actually the knowing mind is another mind. Anger mind is another mind, right? When you say, okay, let me be mindful, I'm angry. My mental state, I'm angry. Actually, how it works? Why our observing mind can help us to overcome anger? Because observing mind is another mind. The mindful mind is another mind. When we say, I'm mindful of my anger, actually, very soon your own anger subsides. Because the angry consciousness get cut off. You know? The mind is so fast, even in a, like this, so much consciousness, thought process go through. Millions, billions of consciousness go through within this. But when you say, I'm mindful, I want to be mindful of my anger, actually, you are mindful of, the mindful mind is one mind. It doesn't arise together with the angry mind. But the mindful mind, be mindful of the angry mind, which is immediately just cease. So if you can know the mind which cease just a moment before, you can know similarly, it's a past mind. You never know the mind which arise right now. When we say I'm aware of an angry mind, you're never aware of the mind which just arise. Because the mindfulness, the wise mind, the observing mind just arise. The moment it arises, the observed mind is already ceased. So no one always, when we say pay attention to a present mind actually is always a past mind. So it's just how long ago? 1 hour ago? 1 day ago? Many lives ago? Or just 1 moment ago? It's the same. It's just through training you can see it long, the mind sees long ago. That's like that. You never see actually exactly, you literally never see the present mind. When we say this, it's just a convention. You say, observe your present mind, observe your mind now. Sometimes people get upset with, come to us a reporter and say, oh no, check your mind now. Look at your mind now. Actually, when we say look at your mind now, we are trying to arouse the mind, which of the wisdom and mindful. Actually, when that arise, the unwholesome mind already sees. Like that. So when you say you can know your angry mind, you are actually knowing the angry mind which has passed. Like that only. So, you want to know moha? Similarly, the moha, the mind which sees, then the observing mind, you can see the moha. With training, with concentration, with proper training, you can do citta nupassana. Seeing the previous mind, which is moha. You can see 1 hour before the moha. You can see, you have, for example, when you do your giving, you want to check that mind, when you give, some time ago, whether you give with wisdom or you give with deluded mind. You can go through and check your thought process. You can see. In fact, future mind also can be seen. But that is a projection. You can see the projection, which is not yet come and which can be changed. But this is more profound. Okay. So, moha can be seen. Can be seen. Does mindfulness precede wisdom? No. Can mindfulness coexist together with wisdom at the same time? Yes. Yes. It doesn't mean you always have to be mindful first and wisdom come later. No. Mindfulness and wisdom can come together. But you can be sometimes mindful without having that wisdom. But when you have wisdom, definitely you are mindful. Because mindfulness belongs to the, just now we show you the 19, beautiful, mental states. That one, in all wholesome mind, definitely you have this mindfulness. So when you are wise, wisdom arises, definitely you are mindful. But when you are mindful, it doesn't necessarily show that you have that wisdom. But usually very strong mindfulness usually come with wisdom as well. Okay, next question. But the Diamond Sutta, this is Mahayana text. Huh? Okay. Diamond Sutta say there's no existence of Jingang Jing. There's no existence of enlightened mind. Subhuti replied, as far as I have understood, the Lord Buddha's teaching, there's no independently existing object of mind called the highest, most fulfilled, awakened or enlightened mind. Nor is there any independently existing teaching that the Buddha teaches. Why? Because the teachings that the Buddha has realized and spoken of cannot be conceived of as separate, independent things and therefore cannot be described. The truth in them is uncontainable and inexplicable. It would be better for me to see its Chinese version. It neither is nor is it not. What does it mean? What this means is that the Buddhas and disciples are not enlightened by a set method of teachings, but by an internal intuitive process which is spontaneous and is part of their inner nature. Okay, this is a Mahayana language. I wouldn't go into it, but I just go to explain. It would be very strange for Theravada people to explain Mahayana teachings. So I'm not going to say to justify this teaching or whatever, because this is another language, another kind of expression. But anyway, this expression is correct. No independently existing object of mind. It doesn't mean no. It means no independently existing. That means there's no soul. It is conditioned. So in this sense, it is anicca, dukkha, anatta. It is impermanent. It is unsatisfactory. And it is non-self. And it is empty. One of the quality of anatta is sunyata, emptiness. So it is okay. It is correct. In the sense that, but this sunyata depends on how you understand empty. I know in the Mahayana they emphasize a lot about this sunyata. But in the Theravada we always use the word, we also say sunyata, but more commonly we use the word anatta, non-self. So when we refer to non-self or emptiness, we say it actually is like, there's no permanent entity. No permanent entity. All are conditioned dependently on people. Sometimes they say independent, dependently arisen. Depends on certain condition it arises. So our materiality is like that, our feeling like that, our perception like that, our mental formations like that, and our consciousness. All these are because of condition only. They arise. And because our condition cease, they cease. Like that only. But because these consciousness, they flow and in continues in succession. So people think it is one and one soul only. So this can only be understood through our vipassana practice by seeing the ultimate reality of materiality, mental states, and consciousness. We need to see this in order to serve the So in this sense, we say there's no entity. So in that sense, you want to say there's no such thing as a permanent entity, which we want to call it a mind or soul, yes. But mind, yes, there is mind. This ultimate reality. But because it arises and passes away very fast. So in that sense only. So you have to understand deeply this, you go to do vipassana practice to see the noble truth of suffering and noble truth of the origin of suffering. Then you can understand this. This will not be difficult to understand. But how they express this, I don't want to go into this Mahayana expression. Because in the Theravada, we divide very clearly what is ultimate reality, what is conventional reality. Conventional reality, we say, yes, there's a Buddha, there's an Arahant, there is a you and I. But in the ultimate reality, there's no you and no I, no Buddha, yes. So we are very specific when we say which we refer to. When we refer to conventional truth, yes, there is a Buddha. You cannot say there's no Buddha. But when you come to ultimate reality, yes, there's no Buddha. Only nama rupa, materiality and mentality. It's all empty. It's non-self. So in that sense only. So Theravada, we want to express things in the most specific way. You know? Most specific way. So this kind of linguistic, it can people get confused because there's no and yes. There is and there is not. But in our expression, when you study Abhidhamma, you won't get into this kind of expression. You'll get very clearly, now I say yes, I and you, I refer to conventional truth. Now I say there's no I, no you, I refer to ultimate truth. And these two, you have to understand thoroughly so that the mind will be in harmony. When we say there's no you, no I, no beings, then why you practice metta and loving kindness for all people? Because we cannot only know ultimate truth, we need to know conventional truth as well. Okay? So, the way we express this, we will save ourselves from the conflict of language. How to improve ability to seek wisdom? Ability. Concentration. Proximate cause. Go to the proximate cause. Concentration. Of course, when we say concentration, it doesn't mean only concentration. But why the Buddha says sila samadhi panya? Because when you have samadhi, samadhi is easy, is a mental factor which is easy to measure. Because you have a upachara samadhi, we have a apana samadhi, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. It's very easy to know which level to be sufficient. Actually, when you have jhana, you have your samadhi, You know that the 19 qualities also become very strong, especially the 6 sets, the lightness of mind, the tranquility of mind and the mental states, and then the softness, the proficiency, you know, the adaptability, and then the uprightness. You know, this quality will be very powerful for our samatha practice and for our vipassana practice. When you have very strong up to a point, pull up by the samadhi, because of samadhi, all these 19 qualities become highly enhanced power. And they produce light, the mind produces light, we call light of wisdom, which can shine to see this ultimate reality, which is extremely fast, extremely minute, and you can penetrate. No matter how fast, you can penetrate. Because of the power of samadhi is wonderful. You see, then your vipassana become very powerful. You really come to see the noble truth of suffering, and you can see the noble truth of original suffering. The past condition, present condition, the future. You break through all the, you achieve the purification of overcoming doubt. The doubt about what? 16 type of doubt. 5 about the past lives, 5 about future, 6 about the present. Look at Visuddhimagga, the path of purification, the purification of overcoming doubt. You will be able to understand these are the 16 types of doubts that we have to overcome by when we realize noble truth of origin of suffering. So this is you want to seek this wisdom, learn, cultivate concentration. Of course, not only concentration. In order to achieve concentration, you need mindfulness, you need clear comprehension, you need wise attention, and you need all faith, you need all kind of good qualities. But as a samadhi, as a measuring point, like that only. So sila, samadhi, and panya. Okay? So this is second question. Can I use mindfulness in difficult situations? Sure. Sure. Because when you are in difficult situation, you'll just be mindful. So for example, you have fear. You say, I want to be mindful of my fear. When you are mindful of the fear consciousness, is actually a dosacitta, it cut off, then the mindful mind and the wisdom mind arise, and then more and more, then you are able to, because of the mindfulness, you are able to apply wisdom. Then when the best way to overcome any difficult situation is to apply wisdom. If you apply wisdom, you can overcome a lot of difficult situations. You can see things clearly. But in order to apply wisdom, if you can apply mindfulness, then wisdom, you create the condition for wisdom to arise. Okay? So it's definitely helpful. Mindfulness is definitely helpful. It prepares our mind to solve the difficult situation. With what? With our wisdom. Wisdom about what? Remember our methodology? What is the problem? Identify a problem correctly. Identify the causes of problem correctly. Know what you want. And know how to achieve what you want. The causes. Then you can solve the difficult situation quite easily. Quite easily. How can we avoid negative thinking? Yeah. Fill your mind with positive thinking. Yeah. Fill your mind. Tell yourself negative thinking doesn't help. Where I am, I'm already where I am. Negative thinking doesn't help. It's wrong causes. So that's why we have the reflection. You know, just now I guide you. Let's show you. Our in Dharma Earth, we do the reflection every day. We have a reflection to know that what is the right causes? So you tell yourself, this is the wrong cause. It doesn't help. It doesn't solve my problem. So then you can overcome negative thinking. Sometimes the wise reflection is helpful. For example, one kind of negative thinking is anxieties, worries. Then you ask yourself, there are only two types of problem in life. Problem that you can solve and problem you cannot solve. If I can solve it, I just solve it. Why should I worry? If I cannot solve it, problem, worries, worries and anxieties never contribute to make me solve it. So by reflecting wisely like that, you learn to accept in life there are problems which cannot be solved. This is samsara. So if you are ready for a problem that cannot be solved, you learn to face it courageously and bravely without going into negative thinking. So you are making things better and at least not making things worse. Remember just now our reflection? We try to make things better, at least we don't make things worse with our action or inaction. So this is applying wisdom and not to fall into delusion. Okay, next. How the delusion arises from creation of world and the self in the world. Now this is... No. When we say the creation of world, we fall into the Christian thinking. No. Yes. If you say about the earth, yes. The earth is not created by anybody. Just because of condition it formed, and because of condition it will disappear also. No one created it. And self also, there's no such thing as a permanent self. This, so you want to see delusion arise because of not seeing reality only. Then how delusion was created, you want to say? You want to find the first cause, you can never find. The Buddha said, you cannot find the first cause. You can never find the first cause. So forget about the first cause. Okay? Delusion is, it has its proximate cause. Because of ayoniso manasikara, unwise attention, it arises. And of course, there are many reasons, many causes. Proximate cause is a near cause. Okay? So, delusion arises because of, mainly, the close reason is unwise attention. So, cultivate wise attention by practicing Dhamma and learning Dhamma. Learn Dhamma. And just now, the reflection also is to direct our mind to have wise attention. Right, Anna? This is reflection. When we reflect every morning, we are cultivate the rightly directed mind. And the rightly directed mind, naturally, is easy to have wise attention. When we have wise attention, then delusion doesn't arise. And you want to eliminate delusion completely, then you have to practice sila samadhi panya until you can uproot it because of penetration of ultimate reality thoroughly. Okay? And realize the unconditioned nibbana. How to protect our mind from external disturbance, especially from family stopping us to practice Buddhist life? Sometimes sometimes I will advise people who encounter external disturbance, sometimes you just have to ask yourself how you can be free yourself from it. Not easy, all of us have to go through some difficulty because of people not understanding. So first we have to have a compassion for them, knowing that they don't have this ability to understand. So sometimes we have to cultivate our credibility to show that our a practitioner is wiser. Those days I like to apply a lot of Dhamma in the daily practice. So especially in the family, if I apply a very wise judgment and decision making, so usually this will make the everyone learn to admire. Oh, this my son will go to the Dhamma world. Now I cannot win a debate with him because he understands so well. For example, let's say when we have a family quarrel, or this family quarrel with this family, we have a big family quarrel. So they want to win me over to their side, come to me, talk to me. Oh, we have this car. So I listen quietly for half an hour. Then after that, I just say, so what can I do for you now? What do you want me to do for you now? Just simple question. Because of clear comprehension of purpose. Remember? Then suddenly my relative realized, yes, nothing can be done now. It's over. Everything is over. Who scold who what? Who scold who what? Who curse who what? These are all over. Nothing can be done. It's done. It's done job. Then suddenly they realized, I just one question only. What can I do for you now? What can I do now? What I meant was, what can I make things better now? Nothing can be done because all the curses, all the bad name calling, you know, all is finished, it's done. Now we have to live a normal life. So this is wisdom. See, just simple, clear comprehension of purpose only. You know, suddenly I throw them. You know, they are so engrossed in the argument, suddenly I just wake them, everybody up. Just by this simple question. So this is how Dharma practice increase our credibility in the real world. In the meeting, in the discussion. And if you do that, then actually the world admire those who are strong person and wise people. Yes. The unshakable one. And if we show our Dharma strength and win admiration, then we win the support. We turn public opinion. We are not to flow with public opinion. We change public opinion to flow with us. Flow with the wisdom. The wise must lead the unwise. We don't let the unwise lead us by applying wisdom in our real life. And this will be helpful. If you are strong. So you have to learn every Dharma practice, you have to learn to apply it. Okay? And then, of course, there are a lot of metta, karuna, mudita, upeka, especially upeka. This is also helpful. Learn to be unshakable, emotionally unshakable first. And after that, you can apply your wisdom. How am I going to help them? You know? And then, sometimes this is Dhamma part. But the karma part, sometimes we get a lot of this kind of disturbance because of our bad karma. In the past, we might have hindered other people from learning the Dhamma. From the renunciation. So what you should do? Sometimes give freedom to people. Don't go obstruct people's freedom. If you are a good boss, sometimes you have to give freedom to people to exercise their intelligence. You know, learn to give freedom to people. The husband gives some freedom to the wife. The wife gives some freedom to the husband. And then give freedom to the birds. You know, to the fish. I like to do a lot of life release. Give them freedom. Give them life. Give them safety. Give them security. Give them freedom from harm. You do a lot of this kind of karma and then you make wish. May I have the freedom? I give this freedom to them. I don't have the freedom, but I want to give what I don't have. It's possible. You know, you don't have the freedom, but you give freedom to the birds. Then by giving that, you wish for yourself freedom. And this karma will help you. So with the Dhamma power and Dhamma karma power, you know, marries, we can help. We can make a change in our life. Okay. Next, anything? Time's up, huh? Quite little, huh? So, okay. So we make sharing of marriage, huh? Okay, here we recite Pali and English, huh? Is that after me? Idang me punyang asawakaya wahang hotu. May these merits enable me overcome all defilements and causes of suffering. Precisely speaking, asawa is a taint, but generally we just refer to as a defilements. Then second wish. Idang me punyang nibbanasa pachayohoto. May these merits be a supporting conditions for my realization of the nibbana or the peaceful happiness. Okay, just for those for better understanding. We know nibbana, we don't have a nibbana, is unconditioned. So you cannot say you create a condition for Nibbana. You create a supporting condition for Nibbana. Just like the other shore. The other shore which is not created by our swimming over. But you don't swim over, you don't get to the other shore. So in that sense. So, Mama Punya Bhagang Sabha Satanang Bhajimi Te Sabhe Me Sama Punya Bhagang Labantu, I share my merits equally with all beings. May all beings rejoice and get a part of my merits. Okay. This is a simple, common translation. So With this, we say three times sadhu for our old wholesome deeds that we cultivate by listening to Dhamma. Listening to Dhamma is a cause for the cultivation of wisdom, panya parami. So this is a very important parami we cultivate. So of course, a parami, in order to qualify as parami, you need to have a certain conditions, but we have no time to explain too much about it. So with that, we say three times sadhu for ourselves and also those beings who share our merits. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.